Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood on the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacular. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup. He's scored.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Hello again. Good to have you with us for another edition of Shim, Spider, and so much more. Lots to get through today, including our special guest, ex-Socceroo Hayden Fox, in the final segment. We'll run the rule over the weekend's A-League action and discuss whether FIFA's plan for a biennial World Cup is viable or even desirable. All in the company of my two regulars, Jelko Kalats and Craig Moore. Good to see you, boys. Spider, now, I know you left Zante, but I presume you stay in touch with some of those Aussie boys that are still there. They're into the promotion relegation playoff against Panathinaikos. That's in the Greek second division, of course. Paul Lizzo, Matt Yerman, Josh Belante, Callan Elliott, all involved. That'd be great for those boys if they could get up.
And they've been doing excellent. Izzo's been sensational for them. Keeps him in every match, makes big saves. And that's what good goalkeepers do. Matty German's been solid as a rock. And Joshy Brillante, mate, like always, works hard, does his job for the team to get the success. So, look, it's difficult. It's difficult for him because second division side playing against a Super League team, very hard because the budget's a lot bigger. But they give themselves a good shout.
Be great to see them in the Greek Super League next year. Maury, a question to you. The Oli Roos have organised friendlies ahead of Tokyo against Ireland, Saudi Arabia, Romania, Mexico. The Matildas have got games as well against Denmark and Sweden. But there seems to be increasing doubt still as to whether the games will go ahead. Now, John Coates was quoted as saying they will proceed, even if Japan is in a state of emergency. Is this wise, do you think?
I mean, I kind of agree with John Coates. I think that the show will go on. Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, you've got the safety measures and all these kind of things. Hubs have been tried and tested. And look, I think it'll be fine, Simon. In terms of the preparation, it's good to see Oli Roos get some valuable matches. Although the squad that they've put together, obviously heavily overseas-based with potentially the ones in Australia that aren't required for final series. How many of them actually will be part of the elect that go to the Olympics, time will tell. And for the girls, you know, also a couple of games, which is vitally important. You need that preparation. But to your question, I think the show will go on.
Does Daniel Arzani make the trip to both of you?
Yes. Yes. For me, yes. But, you know, we never doubt the talent of Daniel Arzani. When you start hearing what we have heard for several months now, about his attitude, then that needs to be pulled into line very, very quickly, because as good as what he is, one player doesn't make a team.
Spider?
Mate, that's pretty well said, Maury. Sums up for me as well. He should go, quality-wise, but one player doesn't make a team. And Daniel Lozani really needs to wake up himself.
Okay, thanks, boys. Let's get into it then in Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, one of Australia's first live streaming companies operating since 2008. They focus on virtual and hybrid events, broadcasting to unlimited online audiences worldwide by either a secure private stream page or publicly on social media. Live streaming allows social online engagement as viewers are able to communicate back to the presenters in real time while social distancing. So should you require a small personal event or business level webcast, then please go to streamgate.com.au or you can find them on Instagram. Well, guys, let's start at Amy Park in Melbourne. We dip our lids to Melbourne City. Premiers for the first time in their history, a 1-0 win over the Central Coast Mariners. I think few would doubt, Spider, that your old club has been the best team all season.
Yeah, I thoroughly deserved. Really happy for Melbourne City. Really happy for Paddy Cosnorbo and all his staff and his players and for the club and the hard work and the supporters. They totally deserved it. Central Coast put up a really good fight, to be fair, and made them earn it. But like the good side they are, Melbourne City, they come out on top, even though I will say that it was an absolute stone-cold, blatant penalty for Central Coast that wasn't given in the 96th minute, which is beyond me.
I think Ray Gatz, who is a Central Coast Mariners fan, journalist, of course, a former journalist, he's now in retirement, would totally agree with you. He was absolutely ropeable about that decision. Maury, do you concur with that view?
Yeah, no, pretty much so. And again, 96 minute, but hey, you got to congratulate Melbourne City. They've been a club with promise for so many years, but this season they've managed to to deliver the results and to win the minor premiership and to win it quite comfortable. So congratulations to them. But as Spider said, the Mariners, what a turnaround this season, put in wonderful performances. And when they started to maybe slip a little bit and teams were chasing them and City go above them, you thought they could capitulate. They haven't done that. So the Mariners also well played.
Yeah, the finals would be a terrific reward for that improved season. Paddy Cosnorbo injured again in the celebrations, apparently. He can't take a trip, can he, Paddy? I mean, he got the Premier's plate on crutches and then he gets a whack in the celebration on the field as well, Spider.
Mate, he needs to go back to the gym and do some calf presses.
Anyway, congratulations to City. Thoroughly deserved. They've been the best team on the field all season. Now, they've got to go into the finals and prove that, of course, which has been beyond them before. Wellington Phoenix returning to New Zealand. That was extraordinary, those scenes. A crowd of over 24,000 at the Cake Tin. A real shot in the arm for the A-League. Shows that the potential, Maury, is still there for this competition.
Very much so. And again, I think a lot of people at times have been a little bit negative in regards to New Zealand football and Wellington and what they offer. But it was, it was amazing to see them back at home and the support that they had, for this particular match. And they didn't disappoint either. They performed really well. And Western United, to be fair, weren't at the races. But I think that's down to the way that Wellington Phoenix, applied themselves in the match. It's a very difficult place to go to, Simon. Spider, you've experienced it. I've experienced it. It's not an easy place to go to. So, look, it was just wonderful to see. Returning back home, fantastic crowd. They'd be wishing that they'd have all their remaining games at home, which unfortunately is not the case.
But it's funny what marketing does. They actually marketed the game, Maury. And look at the crowd they got. So they put some effort in and they got what they deserved. Big crowd. I understand that Wellington hasn't played at home for a long time. Market it properly, they will come.
Yep, I think that's a fair point. On the pitch, of course, as you say, Wellington Phoenix, easy winners in the end, and a vital win for their finals hopes, comes at the end of a week in which Ufuk Tale has signed on for another 2 years at the club, which is very important for them as well. A word about Andrew Durante, who announced his retirement this week at the end of the age of 39. Incredible longevity across both the NSL and the A-League, over 400 National League appearances, 24 caps for New Zealand, two titles that straddle the two eras, a Joe Marston medalist, a terrific career that that Durer has had.
Yep. Great athlete to play to 39. Great athlete, great warrior, desire to win. He's been fantastic for every club he's played for. And you know what the beauty about Durer is? I haven't heard a bad word about him.
Yeah.
So it means he's a good person as well.
Seems a real gentleman of the game, Spider. And, you know, to get to the age of 39, no matter what position you play as a footballer, your professionalism, you know, and as players get older, obviously do things a lot better than maybe what they, you know, did when they were younger, because you can get away with things a little bit more. But what a fabulous career to go for as long as what he has done and the success that he has had. And you're right, a pure gentleman of the game.
Just one more thing on the Phoenix before we move away. We spoke, I think it was last week, about the celebrations that Toma Hemed indulged in after he scored a late goal. He went and wrapped himself in the Israeli flag and put the kippah on his head and you know, made a gesture or two. The Phoenix subsequently banned national flags from home matches for the rest of the season, which is only a couple of games. But interested in your view on that, because I remember you saying last week, well, you know, players are human beings, they have opinions, they're entitled to express themselves, blah, blah, blah. What's your take on the banning of those flags?
Well, they obviously didn't listen to me, but they listened to Maury.
I'm not sure you called for the banning of flags, did you, Maury?
No, like my thing was, Spides, and probably where I differed a little bit, was see when it becomes, not a protest as such, but when the display is on the field, you know, during a match. But, you know, banning national flags, for me, you know, I don't see any reason why they needed to do that. I've got no issue whatsoever with flags and banners and the likes at football stadiums, the colour. There's no issue with that for me at all.
Didn't seem to be a problem when the Mexicans were cheering on Ulysses Davila in Wollongong. Anyway, let's move away from Wellington, but congratulations to them. Terrific scenes across the weekend. We had 17,000 at the SCG on Sunday for the Sydney Derby. Sydney FC getting their first win in over 2.5 years. What did you make of the game, and what did you make of the venue? Why are we still playing at cricket ovals? It's obviously an availability issue, but to me, it's just not ideal.
Well, bold warning. look, I mean, it's for me. I remember you know, Muskie coming out years ago and playing on a cricket ground. Look, the surface is never unbelievable. There's obviously a reason why it had to go there. Again, moving forward, as in the future of football, we would love to see, I'm saying less of that, I'd love to not see that happen at all. But I guess I'll go with the positive side as well. You know, it was a fantastic crowd, and it turned out to be quite a decent match as well, Spider.
Yeah, competitive, like a derby should be. It was competitive. Look, Sydney deserved to win, realistically, and they haven't had the rub of the green in the derbies. Wanderers had it over them lately, so I think for Sydney that'll be a monkey off the back to win a derby like that. They deserve to win. I think Wanderers have got me baffled. I swear to God, they have got me baffled. You know, 2 weeks ago we were raving about them and we were saying they're going to make a late charge, and the last two games, They haven't been great. Like Perth, they were woeful. And they weren't bad last night against Sydney FC. Sydney was just better.
They've got no
if it
balance.
Wasn't for Margush, if it wasn't for Margush, the game probably finishes 2 or 3 the good for Sydney FC.
I just think that, like I said, the balance of that squad, you know, you see all their attacking talent, but then you see in other positions which, you know, you go on good defences and being solid defensively can win your championship, Spider. As you know, I just think that they've got the balance of the squad wrong this season. They're top heavy. And Western Sydney Wanderers, for Carl Robinson, for Kenny Miller, their remit would have been finals. If they don't make the finals, which, you know, is a big possibility now, it's an unsuccessful season. There's no doubt about that. The goal that was disallowed, Spider, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on that. I felt it probably was a foul. Ziggy Gordon, if he gets his back and comes across Ninkovic's line, it would have been okay. But because he was face on and he kind of had the shove, unfortunately, it stopped the Western Sydney Wanderers' well-worked goal for Bruce Comeau.
Yeah, I thought both disallowed goals. I thought Sydney FC's disallowed goal was definitely a foul. And to be fair, Ziggy Gordon, if he didn't go so directly for Ninkovic, he probably would have got away with the check. It was like he was playing gridiron and he had to just knock him over. But it really was a well-worked set piece. Pity that they didn't get the goal. But yeah, that's football. You can't play gridiron.
As you rightly point out, the Wanderers now with three games left. They've got two home games coming up against Wellington and Brisbane, which are the two teams directly above them, before a trip to Adelaide on the final day. I mean, surely if they lose against Phoenix, they're gone. And that puts a lot of pressure on Carl Robinson, given the brief he was given at the start of the season, Maury.
I think so. Again, and Carl Robinson, he's professional enough to know that, you know, if they fall out of the top six this season, it's not been a successful season. You know, he's failed. You know, I'm pretty sure that doesn't mean that he's going to lose his job. Western Sydney Wanderers will, I'm sure, give him the opportunity again to try and correct that. But, yeah, I mean, with the squad... with, I guess, the support, where that club should be, top six is minimum. You know, top six is still, you kind of at times can talk about mediocrity. They're, you know, top three. So not making a top six would be a huge disappointment and a very unsuccessful season, in my opinion.
Yeah, for me, Maury, he'd be scratching his head. He really would be, because there have been performances where you think, wow, how good are they? Their biggest problem for me is they're inconsistent. Mm. They are really inconsistent, and it's so obvious that they go from being so good to absolutely woeful. And that's not a good football team. That is a bang average football team, because if you want to win, you need to be consistent. If you want to win a championship, you need to be consistent. So everyone can play one good match. But in a season, you can't win a championship like that.
Spider, we talked before we started the recording about the responsibility of playing for a club like Wanderers. Mm. And you were making the point that you thought that you're not 100% sure whether some of the players understand how big the football club is.
Did you catch 100%, Son. 100%. Like, for me... In football, there are good players at every level, but there are players that can win a championship and can go on and win things, and there are players who just play for the sake of playing football. And they're good players as well, don't get me wrong, but they're never going to win anything because they don't have that quality. Western Sydney Wanderers is a big club. You need to have the character to actually be able to put on your shoulders the expectations of what that club is. And that is to win. And that's what I think, not just Western Sydney Wanderers, I think Victory is another club like that. I think Sydney FC is another club like that. You have to have broad shoulders and be able to handle playing for a big club. That's how you become successful. And not everyone can do it, sadly. Even good players can't do it.
Okay, the Jets losing again to Brisbane, the fixture that always seems to produce an away win. 14 matches now without success for the Jets. And yes, we know they've had a lot of problems off the field, three short of their own unwanted club record with three games of the regular season still to go. Can you offer any crumbs of comfort, any words of hope for the long-suffering Newcastle Jets supporters, Maury?
That's difficult. And it's probably been more difficult for those supporters. That kind of run obviously has you exactly where you are. The only way that you can turn these things around is by stability, which is still uncertain for them, unfortunately. And hard work, rolling your sleeves up and kind of, just working your backside off to turn the performances, turn that little bit of luck. Sometimes you need a little bit of luck, but you got to
work hard. Is there
enough
quality in that squad?
There's not. So, that's the issue for the Jets at the moment. I think they took the cheaper option in terms of Deans. Again, on the back of a little mini kind of kick that you get, bounce, if you want to call it that, when you're looking for a manager, and the one that's doing the interim job looks to be doing okay. But longer term, as we've seen, and again, it's not being disrespectful to Craig, Deans, it's just that, Newcastle, with the position they're in, made the cheaper option, their decision, hoping that they would get through the season and do okay. And it doesn't work like that. You've got to really have the belief and set the standards. And players, they pick up on every little thing that is not going right at a football club, especially when you're struggling, Simon. So that needs to be corrected at Newcastle Jets, because we've touched on it many, many times. It's a fantastic football club, great community. And I'm sure they'll get back to bigger and better things, but we'd like to see it happen a lot quicker.
Maury, I want to ask you as well about Brisbane, because they got the chocolates. Three home games left out of their last four. They've got one extra to play than some of the others. They play City, the Premier's, of course, on Tuesday. And then they've got Sydney and in-form Perth to come as well. Can they make the six, Brisbane?
Yeah, they can. They can, but as you touch on there with those games, it's a really tough run-in. And it may well come down to the last day of the season, that home game against Perth, which could be massive for both those clubs in terms of a potential finals position. But look, I think Brisbane have done okay. Again, they're probably just, inconsistent. I wouldn't say that they're as bad as, say the Wanderers in terms of unbelievable performance to then really, really poor. There's not been a bigger gap as that. Dan Zaki, for me, a young 20-year-old, I think it's been a sensation this season for Brisbane. He's always done really well. So there's positives for Brisbane. They've still got a chance for the final, Simon, I believe.
Adelaide United's defeating Melbourne, victory by the only goal. Another strike from Craig Goodwin. He's been impressive since coming back. They go up to third. And Spider, I want to ask you about the Perth Glory MacArthur game, which ended all square. Perth really needed to win that one, didn't they? Even though they'd won a whole batch of home games, they needed to keep that momentum going. They've got three away games now to finish off the season. They've only taken 2 points out of a possible 18 on the road since February. How big a blow was not winning that game against MacArthur on Sunday for you?
No, it was a huge blow for Perth, but it wasn't from a lack of trying. They come up against the best goalkeeper in the league, Federici, who kept MacArthur in the game. And that's what he's done all year. He's kept MacArthur in the game, and then they got Derbyshire up top that scores and goals. And I think MacArthur's having a fantastic season. I really do. Perth will be disappointed they didn't win, Simon, because they had the chances. But what do you do when you come up against a goalkeeper like that? When he saves everything, that's it.
And Derbyshire, I mean, even his goal is just... It's brilliant forward play. He gets across his centre half. He's done it all season. He's been a great signing for MacArthur. He's a real goal scorer. He's a clever player who's played at a high level, and really, really pleasing for him and for MacArthur that's translated to the A-League.
Talking of clever players, last one before we head to the break. Diego Castro did manage to get one past Adam Federici. Says he's unsure of whether he's going to continue on with Perth Glory. That might have been the last time the Glory fans will see him at HBF Park. Just sum up for us, if he is to go, and obviously we hope he doesn't necessarily, but just sum up his impact for us, Maury and Spider.
Look, for me, a player like Diego Castro and what he has delivered for the A-League, when he decides it's time to go or enough is enough, for me, that decision should be purely with him. He's been unbelievable. Look, we know he's not the quickest, Simon, but his technical ability, his creativity, the way that he plays the game, you know, he even at such a good age, in terms of a little bit older, he really looks as if he enjoys his football. He's been an enormous signing for Perth. He's been a fantastic player for the A-League. And if it is his last season, then obviously we'll wish him all the very best. But if he wants to go around again, I can't see anybody saying that couldn't be possible, because he still does the business week in, week out.
Spider, anything to add?
Yeah, no, I think he's been a fantastic player for the A-League and for Perth Glory. He's just entertaining to watch. And they're the kind of players we want to see in the A-League. My opinion is, he's 30, what is he, 37 now? A salary cap's a big issue. I would say it probably is the last game, unless someone else picks him up in a different role. But he's been fantastic attribution to the A-League.
He most certainly has, 38 years of age and a terrific contributor to the A-League. I think one of the best of all time in the modern day, up there along with Thomas Broich and Besart Berisha and Miloš Ninković. Of that, there is no question. Thanks, guys, for the moment. Let's head overseas. London Calling.
London Calling.
Go further with the Australian College of Physical Education. With more than 100 years of experience, ACPE's courses are designed to get you career ready. Their bachelor degrees in sports performance and business, health science, applied fitness, education and dance can help turn your dream into a career. Find out where ACPE can take you. Apply online today for Semester 1 2021 at acpe.edu.au. Okay, well, let's kick off with the final day of the Premier League season. Not too many issues to be decided. Obviously, the three teams were already gone at the bottom. Manchester City were already champions at the top. So it was all about the Champions League, Maury. And Liverpool made it, finishing third with a final day win over Crystal Palace. Jeez, you've got to feel sorry for Leicester, though, missing out for the second season running on the Champions League in the final week of the campaign. They'll be there all season.
It was a crazy day, Simon. It really was. Obviously, Liverpool get their result. Mane scores the goals. Eighth consecutive game against Palace in terms of scoring against them. Incredible. So Liverpool done their job. But the real interesting part of the day was between Leicester's game against Spurs and Chelsea Villa game. Because obviously Leicester were in for majority of the play today. And then Tottenham ended up steamrolling them to knock Leicester out of the Champions League positions for the second time in two seasons. And Chelsea, even after defeat, although, Simon, you might be interested to hear, they did lose Mendy at half-time. The Champions League final, Kepa come on. Ooh. For the second half.
So he could be out in Portugal.
Potentially. I've not seen any news following up for it, but he was, whether it was precaution, or whether there's a genuine issue there. Mendy come off at half-time. It was really, really exciting today. You know, just you're right, Man City were away and job done, but there were still some great scenes there with Aguero, some emotional interviews from Pep Guardiola on Aguero. So it was a great day.
Spider, your assessment of Sergio Aguero's contribution at Manchester City and to the Premier League in general?
I think he's been outstanding. I think the goal, Simon, I think you should actually speak about the goal that he scored when they won it, when it was incredible. That'll never be forgotten. That'll never be forgotten. And that's one moment. That's only one moment. But his whole time at Man City has been fantastic. He's a goal-scoring machine. Look, injuries got the better of him a little bit the last year, but fantastic player. Great goal scorer.
And he's... Boys, he come on today. Sorry, Simon. He come on today for, 30 minutes? And he's unlucky not to score a hat-trick. So it was incredible. You know, it really was the you know, what he's done at that football club. And actually, for me, seeing Pep Guardiola being so emotional after the game, speaking about not only Aguero as a player, but as the human being, I just thought it was a wonderful, wonderful story.
And he's not exactly going to a small club either. He's going to Barcelona to go and play with his mate Leo Messi, unless Messi, of course, leaves during the off-season, which is entirely possible. What about Jurgen Klopp's comments? I'm sorry, but this I'm going to bring my sort of Man City fandom in a little bit here. This irritated me, this comment. Jurgen Klopp saying, if Man City had had Liverpool's injuries, they wouldn't have won the title. Does he need to say that? They've had a great couple of years, Liverpool. Why poke the bear on that?
Yeah, I don't think he needed to say that. I thought Liverpool finished the season off very well. They got the Champions League spot that they were looking for. And maybe he should have been happy with that. And, you know, I always say, worry about your own club. Don't worry about what others are doing and what's happening elsewhere. So, yeah, I don't think he needed to say that.
Spurs, Moria, probably worried that Harry Kane leaves during the off-season. That might have been the last time we saw him in a Tottenham jersey in that win against Leicester. What will they do? I mean, are they going to try everything in their power to keep him? Or do you think, reading between the lines, Daniel Levy and the management at Tottenham have sort of accepted that maybe it's time for him to go?
I still think it's a little bit chicken and egg, you know. I mean, obviously, after the game today, he's kind of by himself and going about and applauding the supporters and all that sort of stuff. But sometimes you can read too much into that. He's obviously going to have an opportunity, you know, whether it be the Man United or Man City, that you know, will be looking for that striker. You know, listen to some of the reports today, Simon. They're saying, you know, he's a lovely guy. So maybe Daniel Levy has the upper hand because Harry Kane won't want to, you know, let him down. But I think he's been quite clear in terms of, you know, he feels that there's so much more he can do in his career. He can actually get better numbers in terms of, you know, his goals and performances. He wants to win trophies. When Tottenham are going to announce their next manager, is that potentially a carrot? I don't know. It still can go so many different ways, I think.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, go on.
That's the thing. Sorry, Simon. Mate, he wants to win trophies. That's a winner, mate. That's a Suarez. That's these kind of players that go to clubs that want to win something. That's what I was talking about earlier in the show. You can actually be a good player and just play football without winning anything, or you can actually push yourself to the limits and go to clubs where you can try to win. And he's probably at a stage now where he wants to do that. He's desperate to do that.
I think I read in one of the newspapers a couple of weeks ago that his former teammate, Kyle Walker, since leaving Spurs and going to Manchester City, has got 10 winners' medals in his trophy cabinet. I mean, that's the difference, isn't it? I guess for a player like Kane, he'll know Kyle Walker, maybe stay in touch with him, maybe he's good friends with him, and he'll be looking at his medal counts racking up and thinking, at some point, I've got to do something about it. And he is such a terrific player. Roy Hodgson, congratulations to him, retired at the age of 73. I don't know if you saw his interview during the week that he did last week. He's still got a bit of spike in him as Roy Hodgson. A reporter asked him about a VAR decision or a penalty decision, and he didn't half get fired up by that. Just on the Spurs manager, before we head overseas to other countries in Europe, Nuno Espirito Santo is going to leave Wolves, or has left Wolves, at the end of this Premier League campaign. Is that an option for Spurs? He's done a pretty good job at Molineux, hasn't he?
I thought he'd done a great job.
Top job. Yeah. Be interesting. I mean, obviously, the players that have come into Wolves, a lot of the Portuguese influence. Spurs is a massive job. It's a massive job because I think that probably Levy got it wrong in terms of the sacking of Pochettino. They had a really, really good manager and, you know, probably gone backwards since then. It's important they get the right man because, you know, we're talking about potentially if you lose a Harry Kane, Simon. That nous, in terms of the market and getting the right players to be able to take Tottenham forward and be, you know, top four again. It's a team that was Champions League a couple of seasons ago. That's where they need to get back to. Nuno's he's an interesting candidate. He'll certainly, he'll be in a shortlist, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. I think he's a terrific manager who's done a great job with Wolves. Let's move away from England for the moment. FIFA, just a general footballing question. Looking at staging the men's and women's World Cups every 2 years. And there was also a report last week, I don't know if you saw this, guys, that they were kept in the loop at every stage of the failed Super League revolution, which I think was fascinating. There's clearly some battle going on with UEFA for control of the sport, even at club level. But what's your take on a World Cup for men and women every 2 years? That's overkill, isn't it?
That's ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous. So the player, you know, the one thing they're not even looking at is the athletes. They cannot handle all these matches. That's one thing. I mean, I know they want it every 2 years, and if they want it every 2 years, they'll make it happen every 2 years because it's all about the money, what they're going to generate. But it's ridiculous. And you know what? People will lose interest in the World Cup.
Couldn't have said it better. Let's head to Spain. Luis Suarez, we mentioned him a few minutes ago, champion yep. with Atletico Madrid. If you're Barcelona looking at that, you're whacking yourself on the head, aren't you? Thinking, why did we let that guy go? And now they're signing Sergio Aguero, who's a similar age.
He came out, didn't he? Suarez is kind of, you know, he feels a love at Atletico, you know, that Barcelona didn't feel that, you know, that he could make that contribution. So it's obviously a really sweet time and you know, season for Suarez. By the way, something incredible, I thought. Atletico have won the title 11 times. 10 of those times they've won it on the last day of the season.
Shows you the strength of Real Madrid and Barca, I guess.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Terrific success for them. Congratulations to Atletico. Congratulations to Spider to Juventus, who managed to sneak into the Champions League in Italy on the final day. Is Andrea Pirlo's job safe?
I would say yes now. It's funny, he was getting a lot of stick. He won two trophies this year, and he's made the Champions League. Milan were fantastic. They had a heck of a game today against Atalanta. It was a big one, and they were actually dominant to cement their spot in second. And I feel so sorry for Rene Gattuso because, mate, Napoli had an unbelievable second half of the season. And to draw today with Verona and to see Juve jump him on the last day, it'd make Rene absolutely sick. And that's his last game for Napoli as well. So, yeah, but I'm sure you'll get another great opportunity somewhere.
Benzema, Simon, I think I seen you shoot through a note. Karim Benzema being out of the French squad for 6 years has been called back in. But I tell you what, I've done a little bit of research. Isn't he an interesting character in terms of his history? I seen a tweet. He was asked a question about Giroud. Somebody says, Giroud deserves to play ahead of you in the national team. Benzema's response, you don't confuse F1 with go-karting.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah? I mean, that's going back a bit, but I think we know that the French squads can test each other at the best of times.
Volatile, so, I think, is the word.
Yeah. But a wonderful player and had a fantastic season. But like I said, he's an interesting character.
Out in the cold for nearly 6 years, but recalled by Didier Deschamps ahead of the Euros. Let's see which way that one goes. Maury, to you for the final question. It's a sort of a double question, really. A couple of other events that happened in the UK at the weekend. A Scottish Cup final, disappointment for Martin Boyle and Jackson Irvine as they lost to St Johnstone. Heck of an achievement for them to do the Cup double. And a word for Jared Gillett as well, who ref the Brentford-Bournemouth game in the playoffs and the championship in England absolutely terrifically well.
Brilliant, brilliant. I mean, also, you know, you need to get things right, obviously, in the playoffs and all that because the pressure. But I really enjoyed, you know, watching the game. Brentford are a team that, like I think we touched on last week, that I've followed. And nice to see, you know, Australian Jared Gillett refereeing that game, doing a good job. And you know, we talk about players, we talk about coaches, talk about administrators, referees as well, you know. Like Jared's come over and he's had to work extremely hard. And to get to a stage where he's you know, he's officiating the main games of the season here in England. He's done really, really well. So well done to Jared. He handled the game extremely well.
And a word on the Scottish Cup final. I presume you watched that one.
Yeah, I did. I did. Like Hibs, with their attacking threat and the players that they have, obviously, you know, you're talking about Martin Boyle and Jackson with the two Australian boys, but Doidge up front. They've got a good player in Nisbet, striker. Look, on paper, Hibs were the better side, but St Johnstone have shown that they're a fantastic cup side. Callum Davidson, in his first season, has managed to win the double, which is incredible. I don't think it's been done since 1989. So disappointment for our Australian lads, but Hibs probably didn't do enough in this game to really go and test St Johnstone or you know, put him to the sword. Congratulations to St Johnstone.
Yep, the first team to do that cup double outside of the old firm Celtic and Rangers since Aberdeen back in the late 80s, early 90s, as you rightly say, Maury. All right, so thanks for the moment, guys. We're heading into our final segment of the show this week, and we've got another great guest waiting for us in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today was born in Sydney in 1977. After starting his junior career with Blacktown City, he signed for the Dutch giants Ajax in 1995. He then led a fascinating career playing for Arminia Bielefeld in Germany, Sanfrecce Hiroshima in Japan, West Ham, Portsmouth and Leeds in England, and Mechelen, briefly, on loan in Belgium. He returned to Australia in 2007 to play for Perth Glory and later won an A-League Championship medal with Sydney FC. He won 11 caps for Australia and since retirement has been coaching as assistant at Melbourne Heart, Western Sydney Wanderers and Perth Glory. He is, of course, Hayden Fox. How are you, Foxy?
Very good, thanks, Simon. Thanks for having us on the show, mate.
It's great to have you with us. Let's start at the beginning, which is as good a place as any. Blacktown City to Ajax seems quite a quantum leap. How on earth did all that come about?
Well, that wasn't really... I went from Blacktown City as a junior and went to the AIS for a couple of years before going to Ajax. So the opportunity came for myself and Josip Simenic, who you know, who ended up having a great career for Croatia, but Australian-born. We got the opportunity to go and train with Ajax. So it wasn't a trial, wasn't anything to do with trying to get us to move there. It was just going to get experience at a European football club. And at that time, you know, there was no internet or no real knowledge about Dutch football, to be honest, because everyone knew about the old first division in the UK and the Italian Serie A. We thought Ajax was the cleaning brand. Yeah, the old toilet.
Ajax.
That's it, Ajax. We thought they must be the sponsor and they've got a club. I don't know. Anyway, so we went there, we spent a month there, and then at the end of the month, they offered me an opportunity to stay there for a couple of years. So I took it, and what a great experience it was as a young boy from Australia to make his way into professional football, you know.
So I was going to ask you, Ajax at the time, they just won the European Cup. They had players like Patrick Kluivert, Edwin van der Sar, Edgar Davids, Jari Littman and Mark Overmars, Danny Blind, Winston Bogard, the two De Boer brothers, Louis van Gaal was the coach. Were they sort of on your radar? Obviously, you're a young kid then and you're sort of knocking around on the fringes, but it must have been a terrific environment to be a part of.
It was, once I got there and once you get over that first initial part of seeing what European football is really about. We really don't understand exactly what's involved and how they train and you know, what the benefits are if you work and you train and you play to get to that top level. You don't realize you got thousands, millions of kids trying to get to where you are. Yep, Maury, did you want something, mate?
Keep going, bud. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, so you kind of don't realise exactly, you know, what environment you're going into to begin with. Until you get there and you realise, because you know, here in Australia, we have so many different outlets, and we're actually quite lucky and quite smothered in a way that you know you're never put under extreme pressures. But in Europe, you know, I was only a 17-year-old boy, and your expectations at training, let alone games, are scrutinised.
At that stage, are you training? Are you having opportunities to train with the first team? Because that's a team that I knew very, very well. Overmars gave me one of my biggest football lessons of my life. The team that you mentioned there, Simon, was a team that I played against, mate, and we got absolutely belted up by him. So just at that stage, whether you were getting that opportunity, obviously you're seeing the players on a week-to-week basis, but were you any involvement first team wise?
No, not with the first team, Maury. I was there with the they call the RAIN, which is the youth team, the top youth team. And I'd play in the cup games with the Tweede Elf, which Spider would know, which is the second team. Occasionally then, you know, we'd have some senior players from the first team, you know, not in favour, whatever it is, coming back from injury, that would play with us, wouldn't train with us, but would sometimes play with us. But that's as high up as I got. But what you learn there is that every training session is a must to be at your ultimate performance, and anything less is not good enough. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter, I think, where you are in Europe. And I think we've gone away from that a little bit. I'll be honest. We've gone away from that in Australian football, that we don't train like we should play. You should train every single day and prepare how you should play.
Yeah.
We've gone away from that. So we're talking about, I know I'm going a little bit away here a little bit, because there's a lot of, you know, discussion around what's right for the youth and trying to develop youth. But I believe that we kind of accept mediocrity. Mm. Now, if you accept mediocrity, and we talk about now also about, you know, drumming in the technical side of the game about playing with the ball, there's so many aspects of the game that don't involve the ball at all, that do not involve. And we're saying our main learning habits are done between a certain age. I think it's from 8 till 14 years of age. So we should, you know, teach our young kids about technical. Yeah, okay, definitely. About how to pass the ball, how to control the ball, what type of pass do you make. But as we know, in football, there's so many other aspects and more just as important aspects than playing with the ball. Without the ball, can you run without the ball? Can you defend? Can you still defend? And can you still be proactive in the 90th minute, 95th minute? Can you still have a mentality that you want to win? Not that winning's all the cost, but can you still have that proactive and still that mindset that you want to win? So if you don't instill that mentality in the kids, along with the technical aspects, the tactical aspects, 100%, how are you going to teach them when they're now 18, 19? So we as a generation, going back all them years ago, we had so many players playing the top level, right? And I speak still to players this day from where I played in Europe, saying, poor, we used to look at Australia. Yeah, we know that technically you weren't the greatest, you know, but we knew we were in for a fight.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We knew that we were in for a fight every single game. Now you don't have that. We've lost that completely.
See on that, Foxy, the respect that we were given in Europe for that quality, yet in Australia, the disrespect we have for that quality is remarkable, isn't it?
Because it's unrealistic, because we're trying to create robots now. Robots, this is the way. This is how Barcelona do it. This is how Real Madrid do it. This is how Manchester City. We are not Manchester City. We are not Real Madrid boys. We are not Barcelona. But what we have here, we've got some hunger. We've got some desire. We've got some desperation to be able to compete and maybe get a moment when your Harry Kewells, your Mark Viduka's could create something. And maybe you get something from the game.
Yeah.
Now, we have not got that. And that's not the players' fault. That's now what has been drummed in and how we've now developed our players. Because we're accepting mediocrity. And I'm not saying you have to now belt the young players. No. That's not what I'm saying. But what they have to have some realism and also have accountability. And be taught what football is about. If you're going to play at that elite level, if you're playing community grassroots, no problem. But you're telling your kids playing in the NPL or National Youth League or playing for these academies in the A-League, you ask them what they want to do, they're going to tell you, I want to be a professional footballer. Okay, that's what you want to be. Now, this is what is required to be a professional footballer from the age of 10, 11, 12, all the way up to you have a chance to make it.
Foxy, I don't want to detract from anything that you're saying about the future of Australian football, but we do want to talk a bit about your career as well, which we did start upon before we went off on a bit of a tangent, which is perfectly fine. I want to take you to your senior debut. You made it in Germany, strangely enough, for Arminia Bielefeld as a substitute against Wolfsburg. 1997, you came on as a substitute for Sonny Siloy, who I think was a former teammate of yours at Ajax.
He was, yeah.
And I'm sorry to be facetious here, but the thing that stuck out to me, I looked at the team lineup, and you had the best strike pairing in terms of surnames that I think I've ever seen. Stefan Kuntz and Uwe Fuchs. Is there a better strike pairing than that ever?
God bless him. Because, hey, my brothers and all my mates from Winston Hills, they used to love when they got the photo and we sent it through to them of the team lock, the team photo that you have in the summer and the end of July, beginning of August. And they seen this Stefan Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. Let me tell you.
And Uwe Fuchs, F-U-C-H-S, as well.
And Uwe Fuchs. Oh, brilliant.
Oh, mate, they would have had some fun times at the Winston Hill pub when those names come out.
Let me tell you, in the UK, there used to be a show called Fantasy Football. I don't know if you ever saw it in your days in the UK, with Frank Skinner and David Baddiel. And they used to do this segment where they would isolate words of commentary and obviously change the meaning completely. So they did a little skit. Stefan Kuntz scored a goal at the European Championships in 1996. And they introduced the segment by saying, John Motson, who was the UK commentator, of course, makes his feelings about the Germans very plain. And they just isolated him saying, Kuntz! that was it. Anyway, we digress. How did you end up at Arminia Bielefeld?
I'll tell you what, it happened by there was an agent called Ton van Dalen.
He moved me to Holland.
Remember Ton?
Maury would remember him because I think he kind of took a few Dutch players to Rangers maybe back in that maybe.
Yeah. Yeah,
he had an affiliation with the late Eddie Thompson.
Mm. Yes,
and I'd played under Eddie in the Ollie Roos and the junior national setup, and Eddie kind of had recommended to him that, you know, have a look at this young Australian bloke, maybe he's an opportunity to go to one of these clubs in Europe. He's just left Ajax and blah, blah, blah. And I was in Ajax at the time, so I met up with Tom van Dalen, and he had Sonny Siloy and Robbie Mars. Robbie Mars was an ex-Feyenoord player. He played in Bielefeld. And I got a trial there for 3 or 4 weeks, and I ended up being on the books there.
You only stayed there, I think, the one season. Then you went off to Japan. Sam Freche again, Eddie Thompson being the link, and Tony Popovich was there, and Ian Crook and Aurelio Vidmar. Steve Corica came a little bit later. How was your experience in Japan?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Really, really loved it. Look, it was, you know, because I had a really bad year at Arminia Bielefeld, because I had a 3-year deal, and then obviously that finished after 1 year. So it didn't end very well, to be honest. I went to Japan and I just started enjoying my football game. You know, we had, you know, the ex-Australian national team coach. There was Tom Samani there. There was a physio there, which was Australian. So there was quite an Australian contingent. Then there was obviously Popper there, Aurelio Vidmar, and another English guy, Don Goodman. We had a great time. And, you know, I learned a lot. That's what I tell you, as a footballer, I learned a lot from Tony Popovich on how to prepare. Popper was ahead of his game, you know, just how he prepares his teams now is the same as he was as a player. So I was very lucky at a young age playing senior first team football that I could play with Popper. I learned, you know, a hell of a lot. It was funny because, you know, being a little bit naive, I suppose, when you're going into senior team professionalism. A player ran across me and was going into Popper's path, and I was watching the ball. He's run across this way, and I just heard a I looked across, and there was a little konnichiwa just on the floor, and Pop just went, "That's how you stop them from running."
And he did plenty of times.
You know, one experience and one type of, you know, one footballing moment that you learn, you know, you learn. Not that he put his arm out and ripped his head off, but he just checked his run and he was smart and he knew how to now deviate the run that the striker was making, which doesn't happen now. Defenders allow strikers to run wherever they want.
That's probably because of the cameras and VAR, to be fair, Foxy. But let's move on and talk about your 2 years at West Ham. I think it's probably fair to say that you're probably best known around the world for your stints in England with West Ham and Portsmouth, and later on with Leeds. But your time under Harry Redknapp, again, I looked at the team sheet that you were a part of. I mean, Shaka Hislop, Nigel Winterburn, Stuart Pearce, Igor Stimac, Rigobert Song, Michael Carrick, Frank Lampard, Joe Cole, Paolo Di Canio, Freddie Canuti. We're not talking second-tier players here. We're talking absolute top-of-their-game internationals. That must have been a fantastic experience, and led by the great Harry Redknapp as well.
Harry was gold. Harry was a really good man-manager, like excellent man-manager. He knew how to put players together in certain systems to play against opposition, like really well. He could manage a group. You weren't playing, you were playing. He could find a way to convince you to follow his way. So he was a great, great man manager and leader, and had a real passion of wanting to try and play really good football. Absolutely. So I was quite fortunate to play under Harry. And the players that I played with at West Ham, unfortunately, I didn't play a lot because after the first year, whatever reason, Harry left and new manager come in and I didn't fit into his plans. So I had to move on. But, you know, a great experience. And you don't really know you watch English football on the TV, and it always makes it look a little bit slower and easier. It's not until you actually step in there and you realise how quick the game is and how smart the English footballers are. So it was a real quick learning curve I had to make and step up to be able to make an impact in the UK.
When you were at West Ham, Foxy, obviously Frank Lampard, Joe Cole, in particular, Michael Carrick as well, you could throw in there. Yeah. They were young, up-and-coming English players. Mm. Could you sense even at that moment that they were going to, you know, go on to become the players that they did?
Yeah, and they were three different players. Absolutely. So Joe Cole was this really bright, kind of like Gazza-like type of player, you know, could turn quick, put a quick part, you know, put a dissect a defence. He could shoot. He could pop up the end of the box, create opportunities. Michael Carrick was a very calm, two-footed player, like top player. I reckon Michael Carrick would have done really well. Ended up having a top career. He went to Tottenham, Man U, but would have had a top career in La Liga and Italy because he was just calm. He could play out from the back. He could read the game and read the situation. Now, Frank Lampard was already in the England under-21 side. He hadn't made a senior international appearance, but he was already a very, very good and established Premier League player. But this guy, after every Tuesday and Thursday training session, would put his spikes on and he would sprint because he wanted to get quicker and be able to repeat his sprints. So he was already a top Premier League player, but he wanted to become one of the best midfielders of the Premier League. And ultimately, he ended up did. So a lot of players, where the position he was in, would have been happy and quite content with where he's at. But he wanted to keep driving and wanted to be better. And Frank took a lot of stick from the punters because it was his old man that was the assistant manager and his uncle was the actual manager. But we as players knew the quality and what he could do and what he could provide. And it was no surprise to me to see that he went on to be one of the all-time English greats of the game.
You then went on to follow Harry Redknapp to Portsmouth, or he took you with him when he went to Portsmouth. Yeah. And you had at least one great season there because you got promotion with a certain Carl Robinson as a teammate, I notice, and Eddie Howe and Paul Merson and one or two others. Give us your best Harry Redknapp story if you've got one. Everybody seems to have one.
There's a thousand. but there was a good one. There was a good one. And probably everyone knows this one, but he's doing an interview, I think, on a Thursday or Friday, and we're either playing at home or travelling. I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but he's talking to the camera and he's probably in maybe, you know, probably 10 or 15 yards from the corner flag. So you imagine that's the byline, corner flag, goals, and he's in, say, roughly around the 18-yard box meets the byline because they're filming and, I don't know, they want to get whatever in the background. And some boys have been, still having some shots after training, as they do, and a ball comes over and it hits Harry in the back of the head.
It's still on YouTube, I think, this clip.
Yeah. Probably would be.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of like, he's gone, choice words, but he can't get it out of his head. So he
can't let it go.
No, he can't. So he's going back. What was the question again? And he's talking and he's like, who the fuck was that? So, yeah, like the young boys, eh? Young boys are shitting themselves. They're so nervous. it was me. And he goes, fucking hell. Anyway, keeps talking, tries to answer the question. He can't. Turns around and he goes, no wonder you're in the fucking reserves.
You can still find that clip on YouTube. It is absolute gold. From there, Foxy, you went on to Leeds and you played a little bit in the Premier League, but injuries had sort of started to take their toll. You'd had an operation, I think, back in Australia to try and get yourself right for English football again, but it seemed as though your body wasn't quite right at by that point. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, my body was good, just my feet were fucked, that's all.
But it's an interesting one, Foxy, because mate, it's such a rare injury that you had that people actually don't know. Like, explain to the listeners what it actually was.
Yeah, so it had nothing to do with challenging or anything. It was actually a loading issue. So, you know, it's like the doctor explained it to me. It's like you get a bit of wire, and you keep going like that with the wire, and eventually after, you know, a thousand wobbles, the wire's going to break. So that's what it was. It was my navicular bone in both of my feet. And, you know, as football is all about short movements, jumping, explosiveness. So every time I'm jumping and trying to move, my bone was not taking the load. And eventually it would not snap, but I'd just get stress fractures through it. So... I'd miss 3 or 4 months or 5 months, and then I'd come back, I'd start rehab, train, get through that rehab part, and then boom, same thing, because now it's like the wire, it's just gradually getting hotter, and then finally it gives. So it wasn't until I got to, well, funny enough, one of the Portsmouths, I didn't play a game, I didn't train for 2.5 years. It's like nothing. So I kept trying, I get back to a stage, and then boom. So I found out that James Heard from Essendon had the same injury. So we made some phone calls and we found out, you know, how he came back from his injury and what he had to do. So we rang the Essendon Football Club, the S&C, their guy called John Quinn, spoke to him and asked about, you know, the rehab and what he had to go through and the best way of trying to get over this injury. So he kind of asked, could you send it through a program? And he said to me, well, I can send it through a program, no problem. But what I can do is, if you're prepared, how about you come to Australia for 6 months, 8 months, and you can work with us at the Essendon Football Club. So, wow. Yeah, very, very fortunate. So I went down to Melbourne and trained with Essendon Football Club for 12 months. And he showed me how I could still play and how I could still train a certain program, you know, in terms of the loading. And that enabled me to play another probably 3 or 4 years.
So Essendon sort of saved your career in some ways.
Yeah, sorry, Simon, with that, Foxy, you must have been hugely relieved, right? Because as a player, you go through and you get injuries, you come back, but there are some injuries, and the injury that you touch on here, where sometimes maybe the medical department at your particular football club at the time doesn't have the information.
Absolutely.
They aren't giving you the answers, therefore the confidence and the ability for you to get back as a player.
Absolutely.
Going back to Essendon, knowing that you can come back and play and there's a clear program, yeah. Mate, I can guarantee you, because I had a similar situation, how much clearer in your head did you become then?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I really understood the injury. Because like anything, so where we were based in the UK, and I'm not saying that the physios and the medical department weren't good. They had just hadn't come across this type of injury and didn't understand it. So I went from, you know, have an injury, yeah, stress fracture, okay. Crutches, 6 weeks, moon boot, 3 or 4 weeks, and then bang, into training. Well, that was the worst possible thing you could do. Worst possible thing for that injury. So it's not until now, and because I went through that phase for 2.5 years, I'd lost total trust in the medical department. Because I'm thinking, you know, they're telling me something to do. I'm doing what I'm doing, but I'm feeling this. It's ridiculous. So until I went and saw John Quinn, and this is the importance of having good medical staff and having trust. Then now everything now is free flowing, and you can now you're enabled to now move and play with confidence. So I was very fortunate. It was a great learning curve, not only for the injury, but to see how another sport, in particular AFL, how they work, you know, and how they work and how they run and how they do their processes and how they work as an organization. It was fantastic. Plus, at that time, you guys were qualifying for the World Cup in 2005. So it was unreal. They were going off. You got no idea that AFL players and Essendon Football Club, how much they love football and how much they admired the Socceroos. They loved them. They were behind them. They, you know, really respected where everyone was playing and what they were doing in their sport. So it was a real big eye-opener, and their culture. I know, you know, football has a slightly different culture. Okay, we understand that. It's different banter, dealing with different egos. But AFL have a real culture where there's a lot of accountability, within the group. There's a lot of positives and pluses that I took from that rehab stint in Essendon that I could take then into them latter part of my career.
That sort of leads us quite nicely, Foxy, into talking about your international career. You made your Socceroos debut under Raul Blanco in 1998. You were a part of that golden generation, but you missed out on the big prize of going to the World Cup in 2006 and all the euphoria that you just described that sort of enveloped the country. Is that something that you, that, let's put it this way, is that the biggest disappointment of your career, that you weren't able to be a part of that?
Not at all, because at that period in time, I was just trying to find a way to try and play football again, wherever that was going to be. I didn't care where it was going to be. Could I just now get out and continue my career and play professional football? So that was my major focus during that period. I kind of regret that I wasn't involved in the World Cup, because, you know, there's a lot of great players, and there was, you know, a history-making event on that night in 2005, which was, you know, I think all Australians, not just footballing fans, were so proud of, you know.
You'd have had to get past Craig Moore to get in that team anyway, wouldn't you?
The neck. How about the neck? Somehow. Seriously. He gets this high and then his neck goes another. Because back then you're allowed to head the ball, you see.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Foxy, it was an art to be able to head the ball and timing to head the ball.
Absolutely. That's right.
Probably won't be able to head the ball for much longer. Let's just have one more football question before we round off with a couple of Twitter questions from our listeners. Yeah. You came back home with Perth in 2007, and then you had that season in a bit with Sydney FC, which is like a bit of your Indian summer to your career, and you end up winning a championship medal. Now, I obviously call that game, and I remember you gallivanting around the pitch. I don't think I've ever seen a footballer so happy to win a major trophy. I mean, you're always happy when you win trophies, but you were like beside yourself with glee that day.
Yeah, of course. When you get a chance to win a championship or you know, have some type of recognition to win something, because in the end, that's what you want. You want to win things. It's normal. So you can't take that. You have to have that competitive spirit. You have to want to win things. If you don't win things, then, you know, you've got to kind of really look at yourself and see the reasons why you're playing. And, you know, I'm going off a little bit off the track, but winning is just not as important, but it's an important component of why we want to play the game. It's no like question. You want to do a maths test. You want to do a maths test. You want to try and be the best you can. You want to try and get 80, 90, 95%. You want to try and be the best you can in that class. So why?
Yeah, all right. All right, Foxy. That's a bit high, that mark.
It's a point well made, though, Aidan. Look, let's finish off with a couple of Twitter questions. Yeah. Now, obviously, you've been involved in coaching as an assistant with the Hearts and the Wanderers, and then with Perth. Now, Stefan asks, what happened at Glory? Did you get offered the manager's job post Tony Popovich, and did you reject it, or was it your choice to leave? What happened?
Okay. So I get offered the job to take over from Tony Popovich, and I say no.
I'm just reading the question, Foxy.
Yeah, unfortunately, the club wanted to go in a new direction or a different direction, which is fine, which is part of football. And so there wasn't a place for me in the coaching staff, so it was time for me to step aside. And it wasn't my choice to step aside, but I totally understand that the direction the club want to go in, it's a different direction, and that's where I am now at the moment.
Presumably you'd like to get back into coaching at A-League level?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. This one from Paul McColl, which is a question of the week. I've chosen it because it's a bit out there. $100 Outback Steakhouse voucher coming to you, Paul. What is the most embarrassing stroke bizarre training drill you've ever been involved in? Have you got anything for us?
There's probably a couple. There's a few, let me tell you.
Right.
They can come to mind.
One will do.
I remember one time, I'll give you one. It's a very clean version, so this one's not a bad one. So we're at Portsmouth, we're doing pre-season. Harry was the manager. Jim Smith, the late Jim Smith, top bloke, by the way, top bloke, old school, good bloke, loved the change room and loved the banner and just loved everything about football. So we're doing pre-season, first 3 days, you don't even touch the balls, zero. Like, you got to get your boots, they go, no boots, just put your trainers on. All right, trainers on. So we get, so that must Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning comes, and we're like, surely, and everyone's always asking the physios, you see, always asking, what's going on, you know, or the S&C, what's on, and they don't give nothing out, so... he goes, yeah, you'd be getting your boots on today. We're like, oh, wow. And then we go out, we walk out of the change rooms, and we look over the other side of the pitch, and the balls are out. We're like, oh, wow, finally, they're getting the balls. We go over to the balls. We're like, right, we're all playing with the ball, you know, like we're playing a bit of Sheva, a bit of circle. Jim comes out, blows it and goes, what are you doing? We're like, well, we're getting the balls out. He goes, they're not for you to kick. Grab a ball, put it in your arm. You're running for the whole session, but the ball must stay in the arm. So we ran around the whole morning with a ball in the hand. Now you try and do 80 meter runs, you know, 200 meter runs, 400 meter runs. With a ball in your hand. It's like you're running.
At least you got to hug the ball.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That's a good answer. We'll finish off with this one. This is from Arto Harkonnen. Arto says, you've been a part of both Sydney clubs. What do you think are the fundamental differences between them? And do you consider yourself more red and black than sky blue? Or do you keep your emotions out of it? It's a good question, actually.
Yeah. Oh, look, Sydney had been established a lot earlier than Western Sydney. So they had quite a bit of history in the Sydney side. But, you know, what Tony Popovich and John Tatsimus had developed at Western Sydney is quite phenomenal, really. They really created a football club for the community. they really create a football club for that community, for people to follow and to dream about. And it'll take a long time, as you can see, even where Western Sydney are now for the last 4 years, to try and build that again, and trying to get the success they had. Success to try and win the Asian Champions League on that budget with them players is quite phenomenal. I don't have a preference, I'll be honest. I don't have a preference because both clubs provide something different and have a definitely a different outlook and a different community following. Both you know, very well represented. I'd just really like to see Western Sydney get back to where they are. I think Steve Corrick has done an unbelievable job to be able to take what Graham Arnold had built there and continue that. That's not an easy role, and put his own little spin on it. I think he's done a great job with that Sydney club.
It's a terrific answer. Spider, you get the final word, as you always do, with your weekly question.
Foxy, come on. Tell us the best stadium you've played at and the biggest dungeon you've played at.
Oh, mate. Okay, I'll start with the dungeon. The dungeon we played when I first joined Portsmouth, we were in the championship, and we went up to Grimsby Town.
Oh, mate, they get a mention all the time. What a
Grimsby Town. But this story is the best. So we go to Grimsby Town. It's in August. So we played them like in the third round. And it was freezing, like freezing. But on the way up there, right? So all the players are going, oh, I can't wait to the fish and chips on the way home. Oh, they got it's unbelievable. I'm thinking, oh, okay, I'm getting excited. I'm thinking this is gonna be good. I'm looking forward to having the fish and chips. We win 1-0 up in Grimsby, where the field goes is sloped down and it's windy and blowing a gale and people yelling abuse at you. Anyway, come out there, get on the bus. I'm thinking, right, fish and chips, this is going to be nice. They've been talking about it all the way up there. You get there, so it comes in a box, wrapped in newspaper, handed to you like that. There you go. You unwrap it and you look at it and the wrapping is just wet of oil, like oil.
That's proper fish and chips, Foxy. You got no class, mate.
This is your oven. Take a bite. There's about that thick of batter, and there's seriously, there must be maybe a skin of fish in there.
Oh, good. You got no culture, Foxy.
One of the best memorable games. It might not be the best stadium, but one of the top stadiums, because you know, when you play abroad, you play in a lot of top stadiums for different reasons. But the MCG, when it's full of Australian supporters, it's very hard to go past. You know, you've got 100,000 or 98,000 there. It's tiered up. You look up, there's four or five levels, and that certainly definitely does still make your hair raise on the back of your neck. Definitely.
Foxy, we could probably talk for about 4 hours, but we are going to have to leave it there. Brilliant to share some of those memories. Hopefully we will see you back in the A-League very soon in the coaching ranks. But we really thank you for joining us on the podcast this
week. I enjoyed
that.
It was really good. Thank you.
Great fun. That is Aidan Fox, and that's us for another week. And we'll see you next week on Shim Spider and so much more. Bye for now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.